Say you're a business person or you work for someone. You've got 11 million customers about 90 miles away, and the federal government says you can't do any business with them. Well, that's been the situation for 56 years between the United States and Cuba. But now the restrictions are loosening, and there are a lot of folks who think that's a very good thing. Today we're going to learn about rebuilding our relationships with a potentially great new business and cultural partner, reconnecting with Cuba today on Town Hall, Ohio.
This is Town Hall, Ohio, home to interesting people, engaging issues, and enlightening stories. Town Hall, Ohio is a production of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation, working to forge a partnership between farmers and consumers, and is supported by Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Now, here's Town Hall, Ohio host, Joe Corneli.
Since 1960, it's been pretty much illegal for Americans to have much to do at all with the nation of Cuba. But that relationship is beginning to warm up, and for a lot of Americans and Cubans, that could be good news. There's an organization that is working to move along those efforts to normalize the relations between the two countries. The group is called Engage Cuba. And from that group, and to help us understand what's taking place, we have as our guests Mr. Luis Alcalde. He is with the Ohio law firm Kegler Brown Hill and Ritter and is a well-traveled advocate for improved Cuban relations. Ms. Addie Bryant is with the Engage Cuba organization. She joins us by phone from her Washington, D.C. office. And Mr. Brandon Kern is Senior Director of Policy Outreach for Ohio Farm Bureau, which is also a part of the Engage Cuba organization. Folks, welcome to all of you. Addie, maybe start us off. I gave a little bit of a description of Engage Cuba, but give us more, please.
Yeah, for sure. So we are a nationwide coalition. Here in D.C., we focus our outreach efforts on bringing together trade associations, major private sector companies, and other civil society organizations who all have an interest in improved relations with Cuba. We, our coalition, which is made up here in D.C. of more than 30 nationwide organizations, all believe fundamentally that it's time to change the relationship, lift the trade and travel ban. And we also have outreach efforts throughout the states. And Ohio was the first that we launched after Tennessee as part of a polling sample that we did. And we were shocked that out of four states that we surveyed, Indiana, Ohio, Iowa, and Tennessee, Ohioans were the most supportive about a new relationship with Cuba. So we started exploring. And when we got to Ohio, we found folks like the Farm Bureau, folks like the manufacturers and the grocers and folks from every walk are all interested in a new relationship now that we have, there's a possibility to do so. And our mission is really to educate members of Congress from the different parts of the country that this is no longer an issue about South Florida. This is about Ohio. This is about Ohio people, what they want to do, the freedom to trade and travel wherever they see fit. If it's in their best interest.
So, Addie, I would just let you know that here in Buckeye Country, we are very used to being a leader in a variety of arenas. So just thought I'd throw that out there, get my 2 cents worth in.
Of course.
Luis, you are a part of this Engage Cuba effort, but personally and with your own business, this is not a new activity for you. There's been an effort, has there not, for many, many years to help bridge the gap between these two countries?
Yes, without a doubt. And, you know, my personal background is that I was born in Havana and came to Columbus, Ohio at the age of 8 and a half in 1963 as a political refugee. I came to Columbus and to Ohio after we left everything behind in Cuba, after my father had been in prison in Cuba. And for literally probably 40 years, I didn't think a whole lot about Cuba and pretty much believed everything that we heard about Cuba in the United States. And in 2001, I was the first member of my family to decide to go back. I go back in 2001 and literally, you know, within a matter of 24, 30 hours, I have family in Cuba as well. I realized that U.S. politics, the embargo was completely the wrong policy. It was the wrong policy for American business, but more importantly, it was the wrong policy to try to achieve the aims of you know, trying to move Cuba in a different direction. And so I became an advocate, literally, you know, when I came back. And for 15, 16 years, it was a pretty lonely battle, a handful of us in Ohio. And the Farm Bureau, by the way, you know, was one of the first advocates of doing something and doing trade with Cuba. And then Engage Cuba came into play. What I think is the very first organization with a lot of political savvy and money that really was able to coordinate and organize everybody, just like Addie said.
So, Brandon, both Luis and Addie mentioned Farm Bureau. Why has our organization for a long time and recently been so engaged in getting back to doing business with Cuba?
Well, I think you look at the situation of a market that is 90 miles off the coast of the United States, where we aren't able to take full advantage of that market for trade and agricultural goods and U.S. economic enterprise in general. So, you know, our grassroots organization through our policy development has recognized the importance of promoting trade really across the board, and Cuba is no exception to that rule.
Addie, give us a kind of a quick overview of this coalition, the kinds of people and organizations involved in this effort.
Sure. So what's remarkable is you would think Cuba, you think cool vacation. And so automatically you think about hotels. Obviously the airline has made huge news lately, cruise lines as well. They're all starting to leave United States ports or airports and go to Cuba because there is such a dearth of interest. You know, it's kind of the forbidden fruit and Americans are flocking there. But what people forget is those Americans want to eat. They want their cell phones to work. And so you have industries like telecom and like the tech industry, Google, Facebook, Twitter. Everybody's going down there to figure out, okay, Americans are now going to start kind of viewing every part of this island. We want them to have our products just like they have them here in the United States. And beyond that, they're going to need something to eat. Cuba imports 80% of its food right now. It's not using the land to the best of its ability. And so it's created this huge demand for everything from corn, soy, poultry, grain. Everything that Ohio produces, they're importing at a rate of 80%. And so, you know, if you're a farmer or you're any kind of, you know, you're even the chip manufacturer, you're thinking, okay, my customers are now going to this island and none of my products are there. And they're getting it instead from Brazil, from Vietnam, from the EU. And that doesn't make a lot of sense to U.S. business. And so what we're saying here at Engage Cuba is, you know, every company has the right to evaluate the market, and maybe they don't decide that it's for them. But, you know, if you're a provider of cell phone service or a technology or food or whatever, you should have the right to evaluate that market like you do everywhere else in the world.
Addie Bryant is with Engage Cuba. She's in Washington, D.C. Brandon Kern of the Ohio Farm Bureau is in the studio with us. And Luis Alcalde of the law firm Kegler Brown Hill and Ritter. Luis, I think I'm probably pretty typical. What I know about Cuba, because I've forgotten all of my history from high school, is I think of the Godfather and the fact that American businesses, now I don't want to talk about crime and the casino business, but American business existed there. It flourished. We got into a massive disagreement with Cuba over their leaning towards the Soviet Union, so the Cuban Missile Crisis. That pretty much ended much direct contact between the United States and Cuba. Tell us about what that country looks like now. If I'm going to go to Cuba, what am I going to see? What kind of people am I going to meet? What's the society like down there now?
Well, you know, I think that you're going, the very first thing to understand is that Cuba is a big country. You know, it's 700 miles long. And if you're in Havana, you know, which is a city of about 2.2 million people, you're 9 hours away from the other end of the island where Santiago is by car. And it has more coastline than Florida. It has the same population as the state of Ohio, about 11.2 million people. If you took the state of Pennsylvania and squeezed it, you know, like a tube, that's about the size of Cuba, you know. So it's a pretty big place. And so it's kind of hard to generalize. A lot of people go to Havana and, you know, they see a fairly metropolitan, dynamic city, right, you know, that appears to be very much crumbling because of the lack of a lot of work on infrastructure, but a very dynamic population, a highly educated population, no crime, and a society that is in transition, let's say, from a totally centrally controlled economy to try to have more private enterprise, more restaurants, more small services, and trying to figure out how they're going to move to a more sustainable type of socialism, as they call it. Okay, you're going to see a population that is very mixed between African and Spanish European. So you're going to see practically every shade from white to black that you can imagine, with a little bit of Chinese. Cuba had about a 1% population of Chinese, and you know you kind of see that in the genes. You're going to see a population that has a 99%, almost 100% literacy rate, one of the highest in the world. You're going to see a population that is very healthy in terms of the type of healthcare system that they have, and we can talk about that later. But they basically, they're a third world country, as their medical scientists will tell you. We're a third world country with first world health problems. They have the same health problems as Americans, not the health care problems of a third world poor country. And that's because of the medical system that they have implemented over the last 55 years. You're also going to see a very aging population. 25% of the population of Cuba is 55 or older and getting older. The birth rate in Cuba is zero or negative, and that's because of a lot of the social economic issues and the health care. So big picture, you know, there's a lot of things to dig into there if you want to, but that's sort of the big picture of what you're going to see.
And yet, you know, you have some really basic needs that are there as well in terms of, look at the infrastructure across right. The country. So you have this advanced population, and the people of Cuba are advanced in so many ways, like Luis said, but then you've got this really these really basic needs where you just have crumbling infrastructure. You know, if you look at the agriculture sector, just a lack of technology and technical skill in that area. So the needs are big as well.
Right. Exactly.
And while we talked about the business opportunity earlier, there's also a humanitarian opportunity. Nothing wrong with American businesses making a little bit of money, but if we do this properly, I'm assuming we can help raise the standard there, correct?
Oh, there's no doubt about it. You know, I also think that both countries can benefit from this. You know, for example, if we talk about the healthcare and pharmaceutical, both countries can benefit from that.
Well, let's follow up on that when we return in just a couple of moments. Our guests from the Engage Cuba organization, Luis Alcalde, he's a lawyer here in the Columbus area. Addie Bryant is with the Engage Cuba group in Washington, D.C. Brandon Kern from Ohio Farm Bureau will be back after this.
I'm going down to Cuba to see my friends, down where the rhythm never ends, where by comparison my troubles just unravel. I'm North American, you know, don't like to hear where I can't go. Free people will insist on the freedom.
We are talking about the possibility of improving relations between the United States and Canada, and in particular the state of Canada, Cuba, and in particular Ohio and the nation of Cuba. Helping us understand what's going on, Brandon Kearns in the studio here, my co-worker at Farm Bureau. Addie Bryant's on the phone from the Engage Cuba organization in Washington, D.C., and Ohio lawyer Luis Alcalde, who's been working in this arena as a native of Cuba, also with us. And before the break, Luis, you were making the point that not only will Cuban residents perhaps benefit from better relations, but American residents too.
Sure. So one of the things that a lot of people are not aware of is that Cuba has developed a pretty advanced biopharmaceutical industry. And it's no accident that the latest round of regulations that came out from the Obama administration last week addressed the issue of joint research with the Cubans in the area of medicine and created a general license to bring Cuban pharmaceuticals to the United States, subject to FDA approval. The reason that has happened, and by the way, that's building on a memorandum of understanding that was signed this summer between the Department of Health and Human Services and Cuba's Ministry of Health. All of that is happening because there's wide recognition by the U.S. medical community and that there are a number of potentially very good pharmaceuticals in Cuba. For example, two of them, one is Herbaprop P, which is for diabetic foot ulcer treatment, which is a huge problem in the U.S., and the other one is a vaccine for lung cancer that the Roswell Medical Center in New York is pursuing. So we have already American companies pursuing these pharmaceuticals and getting ready to start joint medical research with the Cubans. These are things that are going to benefit not only Cuban science and Cuban society, but they're going to be of a direct benefit to the American people. And I think Addie, you know, has well aware of this, and, you know, she can probably even add to some of this.
I think that, you know, we talk about the benefit to the American people, but for too long, the current policy of the embargo has been stuck in South Florida, and they've talked about what's good for the Cuban people. You know, we're trying to, you know, bring human rights and democracy and all these other things to the Cuban people. But if you go down to Cuba, and Luis could talk about this too, and you ask people what they think of the embargo, they're not in favor of it. They see it as an impediment to their economic freedom. And actually, after December 17th's announcement of normalized relations, an American polling firm went down to Cuba to see, you know, where this stands in Cuba. Where does normalization of relations stand? And 97% of Cubans believe that that removing the embargo and normalizing relations is good for them. They don't support this policy. So to say that this is a policy that is working in their interest is fundamentally incorrect. And I also think that different generations of Cuban Americans in South Florida are also reflecting the same change. You know, for the first time, Florida International University surveyed Miami-Dade Cuban Americans to say, you know, what do you think about this? And 63% support the new relationship. And that's because they are, many of them, recent arrivals. They're no recent arrivals, and they know that this is an impediment to economic freedom. So with re-engagement, we have a really great opportunity to not only share culture, share food, and perhaps benefit, but also to really help the Cuban people. And the one last thing I'd say about benefit to the Cuban people is they are so entrepreneurial, as Luis was talking about. They're so innovative. They're so creative. And that's because of the environment they've had to operate in. But it's also led to this super amazing, wonderful growth in private sector entrepreneurship. So what's spurring economic growth right now on the island is Airbnb people who are using the American Airbnb platform to rent out their houses, and private restaurants who are catering to the boom in tourism as well to serve authentic, beautiful food right in their living rooms. And it's one of the cooler experiences you find if you go down to Cuba. And here at Engage Cuba, we think we should be encouraging, you know, private sector growth like Airbnb users and private restaurants. And that's also an opportunity for American companies, American agriculture, to participate and really help the Cuban people grow those businesses.
Brandon, clearly things are loosening up. Farmers for the last 20 years have been trying to get things to loosen up. Any thoughts on why we're now starting to see some progress? I mean, is it as simple as the fact that we've got an administration in Washington that's more open to this idea?
Yeah, I think that's part of it, Joe. We're kind of hitting on, you've got this, in general, in politics, sometimes you've got this chicken and egg debate about how you bring in countries who maybe not don't necessarily uphold all of your ideals, as the American ideals. And so Cuba has been one of those examples. And some people's approach to that is, you must insist that they embrace your ideals before you bring them in and engage in economic activity with them. Others see economic activity as a way to bring countries like that into the fold. I think you're seeing more and more, as we've now approached, well over 50 years of the policy of insisting that Cuba embrace all American ideas before we engage with them has not worked. Now you're finally seeing a new political approach among both political parties to say, well, maybe we should at least engage with them economically to help incentivize bringing them in to the fold as a partner with the United States.
We'll talk more about the potential of getting closer to Cuba when we continue on Town Hall Ohio.
I've seen you around for a long, long time. I broke your bread and you drank my wine. Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends?
Welcome back to Town Hall, Ohio, where we are talking with representatives of the organization called Engage Cuba. Addie Bryant is on that team in their Washington, D.C. office. Attorney Luis Alcalde is engaged with that organization from here in Columbus. Brandon Kern of the Ohio Farm Bureau, also a part of that. The goal is to build economic and social relationships between the two nations. Brandon, we've talked about the fact that farmers have been a big proponent of opening up that Cuba market for many, many years. Specific to Ohio, what are some of the kind of things that our farmers and the guys that drive trucks and load docks and do financing, what kind of things do we want to sell them?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you look at agriculture specifically, what we're good at growing in Ohio, they import a lot of in Cuba. So soybeans and corn, for example, two of the most prevalent commodities that Cubans import into their country, we're pretty good at growing those things here in Ohio. So that's significant. In Ohio, we produce about 250 million bushels of soybeans every year. And Cubans, 13% of all imports to Cuba are soybeans. So right now, a lot of that's going to our competitors. But there's a pretty significant matchup between the things that we're good at growing and providing and the things that the Cuban people need in their country. So it's pretty significant. There's a pretty significant linkage.
Now, we've been sort of knocking down some of those export barriers over the last number of years, but there's a really big stumbling block in place. We can sell them some of these grains now, Brandon, but the terms are the problem.
Yeah, so for agriculture, agricultural commodities, the embargo was actually technically lifted in 2000. Is that right, Luis?
Yeah.
For humanitarian reasons. But if you look at over time, there was a period where we peaked in 2008, where we peaked, and then actually the U.S. has lost market share in those agricultural commodities since then. And one of the leading reasons for that is the fact that there's a prohibition still in U.S. law in providing credit financing to purchase those agricultural commodities from U.S. exporters. So basically, you're relying on a cash in advance system for purchasing millions of dollars worth of agricultural commodities. So we're not talking about Cuban people trying to buy a toaster. We're talking about millions and millions of dollars in agricultural commodities that they're trying to purchasing. The current modern economy, the global economy, relies on credit financing to do those types of things. And so with that prohibition in place, it provides a huge barrier for U.S. exports to be able to actually get to Cuba.
Addie, is there anything happening in that space that might overcome that roadblock?
Yeah, and I think it's one of the leading issues that we're talking about in the Hill and in the halls of Congress, because it's frustrating for a farmer when they see that almost everything can be sold to Cuba right now legally. You can sell a tractor, you can sell fertilizer, you just can't sell the product itself. And I think that's frustrating. But beyond that, Luis mentioned medical supplies, all of that now can be sold. So, it's a little frustrating. And that's why one of the pieces of legislation that's moving through Congress and that recently had a hearing in House Agriculture and passed the Senate 2 years in a row. We expect it to be an issue coming up in December in what's called the lame duck Congress. that would allow for farmers to extend private financing. And it specifically says private. If a farmer chooses to extend credit and they find a bank who's willing to offer those terms, they would be allowed to do so. No public financing would be involved or allowed. And really, that's just to level the playing field, because the drop-off in exports from the United States to Cuba in the agriculture sector has come as a result of our competitors kind of wisening up to this and knowing that they can offer really competitive credit terms and undersell U.S. products. And so we think that U.S. farmers shouldn't be put at a disadvantage by our own government, by our own Congress, and handing that over to our competitors. And, you know, that's why I think you see people like Congressman Gibbs of Ohio, who are supporting this amendment/bill, because he knows it's good for Ohio and good for producers. And we're hoping that other members of Congress from Ohio will join him.
Luis, we of course we want to sell as much farm product as we can, but what other industries here in Ohio or in the U.S. Could see a real jump in sales if we can get the doors open to Cuba?
Sure. So I'll talk about two things. First, let me give you some facts about energy in Cuba. 96-97% of the electricity in Cuba is generated by burning fossil fuel. And about 40% of that oil is produced in Cuba, and the rest of it is imported, a lot of it coming from Venezuela. And, you know, we understand what the situation is with Venezuela, and it's unsure how long that's going to be sustainable for them. So Cuba has, as a national priority, by 2030 to generate 24% of their energy from alternative sources, solar, wind, biogas, you know, which is obviously burning some sort of vegetable matter. And so there's going to be a very big opportunity for American companies in energy and alternative energy. And in fact, we're already talking to some Ohio companies that are interested in that.
We're going to follow up on the opportunities for energy and alternative energy sales when we continue talking with representatives of the group Engage Cuba on Town Hall, Ohio. Welcome back to Town Hall, Ohio, where we're talking about the ability of Ohioans and Americans to deal more with the nation of Cuba. Helping us understand what's going on, Addie Bryant is on the telephone from the Engage Cuba organization in Washington, D.C. Brandon Kern of the Ohio Farm Bureau is here, and Luis Alcalde of the Ohio law firm Kegler Brown Hill and Ritter in the studio with us. Luis, I had to cut you off for the break there, but you were starting to talk about the fact that specific to Ohio companies, energy and alternative energy companies, there might be opportunities to do business with Cuba.
Well, there are opportunities to do business with Cuba, you know, and it really depends on how easy our government makes it to be able to do that. And then, of course, you know, whether the customer, the Cubans, can come to a deal with us. But as I was saying, you know, there's a priority goal to generate from alternative energy 24% of all electrical power in Cuba by 2030. That means huge investments that they're seeking in wind farms, in solar, and other alternative energy sources. In addition to that, you know, we all know what has happened with the natural gas and the fracking boom in the state of Ohio. I mean, it could be a great export market for that. So we're already talking to Ohio companies, my firm, and we're already talking to Ohio companies in alternative energy that are interested in exploring that market. And I'm sure that that is going to be a great opportunity. Now, we can also talk about general infrastructure. Brandon mentioned earlier about the great need for infrastructure. Cuba wants to build 130,000 hotel rooms by 2030. Can you imagine that? 130,000 hotel rooms. That's a lot of hotels. That's a lot of tourist places all over the island. They're going to need everything that you need to do construction, engineering, and then, You have to fill those rooms with everything that you can imagine goes into a hotel. The opportunities for American businesses, they're 90 miles from us, okay? We just lost, meaning the U.S., we just lost the deal to upgrade the airport in Havana and a couple of other major airports to the French because we're unable to really compete the way we should be allowed to compete.
To elaborate on Luis's point is the U.S. government has what we see an obligation to make business easier for American companies, not to stand in the way. And right now you have a system where, yes, President Obama has done a lot to loosen the regulations, but it's not, you know, the next president could come in and reverse everything the president's done. And so if you're a major U.S. company, you're not jumping at the bit to jump in a new market that still has a lot of uncertainty because Congress has failed to act and failed to overturn things that are codified in law. So we're really hoping that, you know, this is obviously what President Obama has done is laid some really great groundwork and opened a lot of doors for consideration by companies, but companies are looking for more, and they need Congress needs to step up to the plate and bring that certainty to U.S. businesses that allow them to be competitive and go after these really great opportunities and contracts that Luis is talking about.
Brandon, this notion of not knowing what the rules are going to be every time you turn around, for farmers, and we're not just talking about Cuba, but we have the Trans-Pacific Partnership on the table now. We've got a potential new trade deal with the Europeans. Farmers, when they filter through what a particular political party is going to do or not do, this whole issue of trade is pretty darn important, not just with Cuba.
Oh, that's absolutely right. I mean, if you look at the Trans-Pacific Partnership deal alone, for U.S. agriculture, there are huge, huge opportunities there that we can't take advantage of right now. Japan, who's a top five agricultural trading partner with us, you know, that trade exists right now without any type of formalized rules for the trade that we conduct. And so how beneficial could it be if we actually have formalized rules for how we conduct trade with one of our top five trading companies? So you're right. And this lack of certainty that exists is pretty disruptive for business across the nation, including agriculture.
So, Luis, and we've just got 30 seconds here, can you confirm that? Or do businesses start getting nervous when you start looking beyond 6 months and 6 years and 60 years?
Without a doubt. Every conversation I have nowadays is with businesses, okay, what's Trump going to do? What's Clinton going to do? You know, factor that in. You know, what are their stands on what they're going to do with respect to Cuba? And you know, frankly, you know, there's uncertainty until we have the election because one candidate has said first that he was okay, then flip-flopped and said he was going to overturn everything. And, of course, we think Clinton will continue the Obama policy going forward.
More about trade with Cuba when we come back.
See big ships sailing on the ocean. Big ships sailing on the ocean. Whoa.
Our guest today would like to see those big ships filled with Ohio corn and soybeans and Ohio tourists heading from Ohio and the United States to the nation of Cuba. We're talking with representatives of the organization Engaged Cuba. Their goal is to open up trade relations. Brandon Kearns, my co-worker from Ohio Farm Bureau. Luis Alcalde, an attorney with an Ohio law firm, is in the room with us as well. And Addie Bryant with the Engage Cuba Group on the telephone. Addie, clearly farmers, business people, Cuban political refugees are in favor of opening new relations, better relations with Cuba. What's the general public think?
Look, Joe, the American public is voting with their feet right now. And I think that's pretty obvious because you have every American airline jumping in to bring Americans from, you know, Minnesota, Denver, Atlanta, JFK, New York to Cuba. It's one of the hottest tourist destinations right now for Americans going to the Caribbean. Many, many experts believe that Cuba is on pace to pass up the DR as the hottest American tourist destination. And, you know, I think that speaks volumes. But beyond that, national polling since the normalization of relations has showed overwhelming approval by Americans. And now we know that, you know, perhaps people in Ohio think differently than maybe the average American. And so we thought, let's take this opportunity. Let's find out what Ohio thinks, what Iowa thinks, what Indiana thinks, because, you know, that's kind of the breadbasket. You know, perhaps they have a different view. Maybe they still think there's a Cold War mentality, but that's actually not what we found. In a study that was led by the Atlantic Council, a really respected bipartisan organization here in D.C., we found that Ohioans were overwhelmingly supportive of, first off, travel to Cuba. They think that they should be allowed to go. The government doesn't have any right to tell them where they can be a tourist like they do now with Cuba. It's the only place in the world you're legally not allowed to be a tourist. Obviously, with the Obama regulations, we're getting around some of that, but you know, we shouldn't have to get around it. If you're in Ohio, you're in Cincinnati, you're in Columbus, you should have a right to get on a plane and be a tourist, lay on the beach and enjoy Cuba. And so, you know, American attitudes are really paving the way for the new policy. And that's why we're seeing movement. And I think this is irreversible. I think the American people support it way too much to turn it back.
So, Luis, for folks that may have missed your story at the beginning, you were born in Havana, came here as a political refugee, and have spent most of your adult career thinking, well, maybe we should get relations back in shape. Addie tells us that Americans want to go to Cuba. So take off your businessman hat. Take off your attorney hat. If I'm going to take a vacation in Cuba, what am I going to do? What am I going to see?
My first question that I ask people to ask me that is, well, how much time do you have? You know, because if you only
we're
have...
We're a Farm Bureau. We get 3 days a year vacation.
Okay. So then I would ask you, are you a beach guy or are you a city guy? Because if you're a beach guy, you know, you can't really go to the beach just to go to the beach because that's still illegal under our current policy, okay? You can't go to Cuba just for tourism, okay? That's, as far as Obama has gone, that's still the law. You cannot go there for tourism. So you have to go with... for what is called the closest thing that we have to that is a people-to-people trip, which is a sort of a organized or a program cultural trip where you're going to be learning about Cuban culture and what Cuban society is like and those sort of thing. But
so there is a wink and a nod solution.
There is sort of a wink and a nod, but you know, if you go, do not go to the beach and start posting on Facebook because you're going to be in trouble.
So Brandon, farm organizations, I assume, are going to keep leaning into this. We've been a part of the coalition to open these doors for 20-some years. What's down the road? How do we keep up the pressure?
Well, first of all, Luis, you and I need to talk afterwards because I need to know all the best restaurants to hit up because I will just spend all my time eating great Cuban food. We will be. We will be a part of this, mainly because it only makes sense in so many ways for our industry. You know, I think it's key that we continue as the agricultural community to these trade missions, so these people-to-people visits that Luis is talking about. We've had some opportunities for Ohio Farm Bureau members to be a part of some of those trips, to go learn about the culture, learn about the barriers. That's going to be important. But we also have to keep up the political pressure. We have to make sure that our members of Congress and the administration, whoever it is that takes over in January of next year, understand that this is an important market for us, and we need to take advantage of it.
I would encourage listeners who are interested in learning more to visit the Engage Cuba website. Just Google them. It'll pop right up. Thanks to Brandon Kern of the Farm Bureau team, Addie Bryant from Engage Cuba in Washington, D.C., Luis Alcalde of the Ohio law firm Kegler Brown Hill & Ritter. Thanks to all of you for tuning us in today on Town Hall Ohio.
Town Hall Ohio is a project of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation and is brought to you with the support of Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Join us again next week for Town Hall Ohio.